Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I'd like to introduce your host for today's conference, Lisa Wilson. You may begin.
Thanks so much. Hi, all. My name is Lisa Wilson, and I work here in the Office of Consumer Information and Insurance Oversight, or OSIO, as you probably hear us called. We are so thankful that you were able to join us today to learn more about this healthcare.gov state briefing. I want to kick things off today by saying thank you for all of your efforts over the past few weeks and months. I know that the folks, you know, in particular in the departments of insurance, have been, you know, doing tons of work with our colleagues throughout the Office of Consumer Information and Insurance Oversight on multiple projects, including the web portal on healthcare.gov, but also, you know, various grant programs and other programs and initiatives that we're running out of this office. So we do understand that y'all have been working very hard, and we appreciate all your efforts. And with that, we'll be providing you with more information about healthcare.gov and the progress that we'll be making over the next few months. So now I would turn it over to my colleagues here on the web portal team to detail some of that information. Brian?
And this is Brian James. Good afternoon, everybody. I wanted to just start off by giving kind of the reaction here at OSIO to the state collection for July 1st. And I think if I were to summarize that in two words, they might be appreciative and relieved. Appreciative that you have put forth so much effort and, you know, made things work so well. And relieved that things really did go reasonably smoothly, and that even though we did have some technical glitches with, you know, the templates early on, I think we were able to work through those and eventually find a way to get submissions from virtually everyone. We did have a couple of states. In fact, there ended up being four states that did not file reports with us. We're going to continue to work with those states to determine the best way that we can work with them moving forward, as well as with those of you who were able to work with us. Other than, you know, those few exceptions, we actually had a great deal of success, I think. We were able to identify at least four different situations where there were comparative tools already out there produced by the states, and we have gone ahead and hopefully integrated that information into the website as we've moved forward. So one area that we may want to get reactions from you on today is how well a job we've done, in your estimation, in incorporating your information for consumers. You know, generally, I think things went really smoothly. We've, you know, the Excel templates, I think, had some difficulties early on, but we've tried to address those, and we've worked things out moving forward. I want to start our substantive discussion of other issues, though, with one of the things that's been more problematic for us. We've had somewhat of a time overlap with the changes from the Affordable Care Act going into place on September 23rd, and what that means for our data collection. In general, I think you are all aware that with the changes on September 23rd, at least at the federal level, we were expecting to see a number of issuers sort of retiring product lines and closing blocks here during September. We were expecting that they would be submitting a lot of information to the states for approval for them to offer. And unfortunately, given the time frame, what we've ended up with is kind of a flux as we're trying to accept data, but we're not allowing data to be displayed that has not been approved by the states. And so I wanted to make you aware that our proposal at this point, our standard for how the issuers should work, is that they should submit their new information to us But if it is a plan or a product that is not going to be offered until October or until it is approved, i.e., they know what they're doing, they've got it all keyed up, they just don't have that finalized piece yet, then we have asked them to submit that information to us, either through the product-level tool or through the plan-level tool, and then indicate for us if it is a closed line of business, i.e., it has not been opened yet. And so what we'll be trying to do is to collect the information, have them indicate that it is not yet approved or available for sale through that closed block piece that I know many of you are familiar with. And then when it does become available, we'll allow them to go back in and remove the indication that it's a closed block to indicate that it is now open for sale. That was the best way we could think of to address the turnover. And I really would like later on in the call to open things up and get what you expect is going to be happening, what kind of market disruptions, what kind of data collection disruptions we're going to see based on those ACA provisions for September 23rd. And just to give you a brief overview of what we're going to be doing for issuers for the October release, we have now trained issuers, our first training on Friday. What we did is we kind of went over the basic outlines of what we'll be collecting. Those basic outlines do include a full set of benefits. We are going to be asking for the benefits information in a fair amount of detail. We have contracted with a company many of you will be familiar with for the initial data collection, a company that runs eHealth. We understand that they have a working relationship with another number of issuers. We're hoping that they'll be able to leverage that relationship to work smoothly with the issuers to get us this, you know, what amounts to a much greater detail level of information. Beyond the benefits information, we are going to be asking them to provide ratings information as well. You know, the individual ratings information is something that eHealth, I believe, has a lot of experience with. We're expecting that to go relatively smoothly. The small group information, ratings information, most of you are aware, I believe, that you know, providing kind of base rates for small group insurance is a much more difficult animal. The results that you get when you're talking about base rates are much more, shall we say, flexible and loose. And so what we have done is come up with a strategy of collecting rates based on three different templates, three basic ideas of generally how we expect most plans are going to operate. We do know that a lot of small group plans are really not going to be as well represented as we'd like. And so what we have done is provide areas for issuers to submit additional information to us so that we can continue to develop templates for, you know, at least the broader blocks of information to continue to improve our ability to calculate rates for the small groups. In terms of how this information is going to be presented to consumers, we're actually going through a process now of kind of reviewing what our strategies are and determining a set of next steps for how to make the most sense of this for consumers. So I don't want to talk too much about that because we don't have the final set of solutions on hand. We've got a number of meetings going on internally this week, as well as working with a variety of different stakeholders to kind of determine what those strategies should be. Next, though, I wanted to give you some idea of what's new for you, the states, in October. One thing that I didn't mention on here is online submission. Those Excel templates, we've taken the data out, we've loaded it, it is now online. A large number of you have actually already gone online to review your information, and so you are going to be able to continue that online capability, which I think will make things a lot smoother moving forward. We do have smart IDs applied to these products, so something that you submitted at an earlier point in time, we are going to be able to track moving forward. We'll be able to make connections one product line to another, or as we keep track of things for you in a way, I guess. But that's the lead-in for the review capability. The smart IDs matter because now we're going to be able to show you, okay, here's what we got from them last time, and continue to connect it to what we're doing moving forward. What we have done is, and this is after a discussion with a number of you that we held a couple of weeks ago, we're going to be adding a set of radio buttons to indicate, you know, if you consider a product line, you've gone in, you've looked at it, you think everything's terrifically copacetic, you can indicate that. If you think there are small issues, you can indicate that. And if you think there is a severe problem where you would like to see a issue suppressed, you can actually inform us that that is your preference. And then we're going to give you the ability to indicate comments. Quite honestly, right now, how we are going to handle this information as it comes in from you is going to be kind of on a case-by-case basis. Until we see what we're dealing with, we really don't want to commit one way or another in terms of how this information is processed. That said, really what we're trying to capture are issues like fraud. Where if there is something going on where we know the information is incorrect and consumers should be protected from that information, we want to be able to capture that from you and address it appropriately. Another thing that we've done to try and make this easier on you moving forward, if you should decide to review the information, keeping in mind you have no obligation to do so, first numbers from the issuers moving forward. That will become available, I believe, for the October refresh. So as you're looking through the information and you're trying to track it back to your records, based on some of the feedback we've gotten, we're hoping that, you know, this makes it easier for you to track what you're seeing. One question that we need to address is whether or not, at what level should we really be collecting this? Our primary purpose internally is going to be the connection of the portal plans that we collect back that they've gotten approved at the state level or that they have at least filed with you. We believe that that is going to take place at a certificate level. There are certificate levels for products, and that portal plans would then be able to associate with that product at a certificate level. We suspect that the rate numbers might actually change between different plans, and so we might not be able to have a unique SERF number for a product if we go that way. And we'd actually like a little guidance on how you think we should proceed with that.
Interrupt and make sure that everybody is on mute, that on the speaker line.
And it sounds like they've done that. Yeah, thank you, whoever that was, and sorry for the interruption. The last thing I wanted to indicate, and I probably shouldn't have said what's new for states, because it's really what's new for consumers, but we are going to be asking for three additional elements at the product level from issuers for our October release. This is at the product level, and what we're going to be asking for is the total number of applications, the total number of rejected applications, and the number of applications that were, or the number of offers that were uprated. Okay? And there's various technicalities going into the definitions of those. There's a fair amount of discussion still on how we want to best utilize those elements, but those are elements that we had indicated we were going to ask for in the regulation. We're now implementing that. We've decided the time is now. And we're hoping to incorporate that information into the view of a product line that a consumer would have for the October release. One thing I should probably mention at this point, because I'm not sure we've made it clear yet, is that the product level information, which we have been displaying for consumers, our plan at this point is that for October, we're going to retire that information for the consumer view and instead replace it with the actual portal plan information. We will continue to collect that information. We will continue to utilize that information in making sense of the markets and in tracking both the approval level of specific plans that we get, as well as any issues that may emerge down the road in terms of quality tracking and that sort of thing. So we do have a two-level approach with the products and the portal plans. The products are still very much alive, but for the consumer viewpoint, we believe it's a little bit more appropriate to provide them the detailed level at the portal plan. Okay? And I know that's probably a lot of information. I actually came in here thinking, oh, I don't have that much to say. But hopefully that's given you guys some things to think about. And in particular, we'd really like to get some feedback as we move forward and try to finalize some of these decisions. One thing I really would like some information back on is the SERF numbers. Should we be collecting SERF numbers at a certificate level? Should they be collected at the rate level? And if so, how do we deal with that in our database? The validation process. Is the process that I outlined make sense for you? Does it seem like it is going to give you what you need or feel you need to communicate to the government your opinion on what's happening with those products? And finally, and perhaps most importantly, are there issues relating to the changes from the ACA in September 23rd that we should try to take into account as we collect this information? Okay? And at that point, I'm just going to turn things back over to Lisa, and we'll take your questions, comments, hold a discussion, and move forward.
Perfect. And I would just ask the operator, as you move forward into the Q&A, if you could just have folks identify themselves and the state that they work in and the organization so that we can understand where you're calling from.
Yeah.
So, operator, go ahead, Brian.
I was just going to mention, and if you have submitted a question through the chat, somebody is actually going to bring me that list. So we'd like to take your questions over the phone first, and then if the conversation drags, we'll go ahead and pull out that list and address them here as quickly as we can.
Perfect. So, operator, if you want to go ahead and open it up for questions and answers.
If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Please unmute your phone, record your name clearly when prompted. Your name is required to introduce your question. To withdraw your question, please press star 2. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1.
Somebody's got to have a question out there. I know I'm very clear spoken, but not that clear.
Great. We'll hang tight here while we check on the list from the webinar to see if there's any questions there.
And if I can, particularly if there are states out there that do collect and collect ratings information and approve rating of actual plans, are there reasons that we should be collecting the rate level SERF numbers? Are there advantages to that, or do you think the strategy of going with certificate makes sense?
The first question is from Jeremiah Samples. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Jeremiah Samples, West Virginia Insurance Commission. It's my understanding that portal technology that with the contract from eHealth is licensing the coding. Does that mean that if the state wants to use the portal technology for our exchange, that we would also have to develop a contract with that same vendor? And what are the plans for the contracts for the portal moving forward?
Okay. That's a great question. Unfortunately,
Hey, Brian, do you mind if I take it? This is Therese.
Sure.
Okay. So this is Therese DiCaro, and I'm the team lead for the web portal. A couple of different things. At the moment, the only way that we can use the information available that comes from this contract, as well as the engine itself, is based on the terms in our contract, which does not include that that information would be or the engine available to anyone else. We did state in our regulation that we are interested in providing, you know, transparency around the information, but we've got work yet to do to get to that particular place. But as far as the actual engine itself, you would need, in order to use that engine, to enter into an arrangement, you know, with this contractor. You know, I think that there's probably a variety of ways that you could do that. You certainly could enter into discussions with eHealth if you wanted to, but it wouldn't be in a direct and way, you know, some kind of add-on or some kind of relationship to us. I mean, it would be possible, for example, for your website to link to our web portal. So, you know, maybe we would need to have some further discussion about what you're thinking about. But actually, the federal government providing access to that engine for West Virginia or anyone else would be outside of the scope of our contract.
And just as a final note, because, and I second, obviously, everything Therese says, but it's also not a given that this is the technology that is going to be used for the federal exchange moving forward, I think I can say. So that you should not assume, I don't think, that because this is the contract that we're using, that this is necessarily going to be the architecture that's used for the exchanges.
Yeah, that's
just
right.
A little premature.
If I could just make one recommendation.
Please.
As we move forward with the state exchanges or when the feds take over exchanges for states that choose not to do it, the public interface, I think, should be as similar as possible from now to then. We don't want consumers to get used to one application now, and then when they go into the state exchange to purchase insurance, they have to learn a whole new application.
Right, and you know, I want to do a follow-up, and frankly, your last comment, as well as Brian's, sort of clarified for me, I think, the implication. I would say in principle that we agree with you 100%, and I was very much describing to you today's state of play. While we are doing a lot of thinking about the world of exchanges, what we're doing in the web portal today is really about the short run. So I agree that your point is well taken, and we understand that we need to consider all of those facts. But the particular nature of this contract is it's not about the exchanges. That doesn't mean it couldn't be, and I think that we'd have to do a variety of things in order for that to be the case.
And, Mr. Samples, I do want to indicate, we actually agree with you that we do want, you know, we know that it's important for consumers to be, you know, to develop a common set of expectations and work with those. To be honest with you, though, there probably are going to be some changes moving forward from, you know, this October, in part because we know that we have a group actually working to standardize a set of, I think we call it the summary document, don't quote me on this, but, you know, we actually have a team that's developing a standardized way of presenting information to the consumers. Unfortunately, that's not available to us yet, but once it becomes available, And we are trying to make sure that what we do is consistent with that team. That is kind of the common view moving forward that we're hoping to utilize. And that, once it is established, would be common at a minimum between what we do on the website and what happens in the exchanges. So we take that into account. It's just we've been moving so quickly that we don't want to lock ourselves in to a presentation that we've decided now is best, but then learn later really isn't. But I definitely appreciate the comment because we're going to be discussing all this week, in fact.
Right. So I think we should go to the next question. How about that?
Yeah.
Next question is from Jean Holliday. Your line is open.
Holliday from the North Carolina Department of Insurance. I believe you sort of posed a question in regards to whether the information should be collected on a certificate level or rate level. First, I'd like you to elaborate on that a little bit, but secondly, also, in regards to some of the new stuff you said for states in October, and I guess it's for insurers also, the application information, did I understand correctly that was going to be requested from the insurers and not the states?
That is correct.
Okay, and can you elaborate a little bit on your question about the certificate level?
Yeah, and to be perfectly honest, Jean, I think you know a heck of a lot more about SURF numbers than I do.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, really, it's the lack of knowledge as we tried to implement a suggestion from a number of people to incorporate SURF numbers that we discovered that, well, there are a number of different SURF numbers, and they can apply at different levels and mean different things to different people. I think in terms of, what we want to accomplish with these SURF numbers is the ability to link plans back to products that may, to the extent that a product is approved at a state level, we want to be able to link these plans back to that so that we can ascertain, is this actually for sale on a valid basis? Right.
I mean, I would say it's really intended to facilitate states giving us that kind of feedback.
Okay. I can't speak for any other states, but at North Carolina level, when we take an action here in North Carolina, it's on the entire filing. And what I mean by that is if we may have rates that are submitted for, let's say, 15 different policy forms, we won't approve one and not approve another. It's a collective thing. If the insurer gave it to us collectively, our action is at a collective level. Now, that doesn't mean we don't approve a 15% rate for Plan A and a 20% rate for Plan B, but collectively the whole filing is the action is collective. So at least from our perspective, I think we would expect you to connect to the entire filing, so that would be what we would call the SURF tracking number. If there are other numbers that SURF uses to track stuff, we don't use it here at our level, for our tracking of our approvals or our actions.
Terrific. No, thanks, Jean. And that's kind of that's how I thought things worked. But if anyone else on the line might elucidate, and how this relates to the particular SURF number, and I thought we had somebody on from the NAIC. If they'd like to comment, it'd be more than appreciated. And thank you, Jean.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1, unmute your phone, record your name clearly when prompted. If you'd like to withdraw your question, please press star 2. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1.
Okay, seeing that there's no questions that were given to us online, so given that there's no more questions, we can end today's call.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us. We appreciate your help and your participation in the call today.